From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The nation, the media, elected officials, and others were stunned this week after a violent mob of extremists on Wednesday breached the barricades of the Capitol building as Congress was certifying the results of the election and invaded the Senate and House chambers. Masses of white nationalists adorned with Trump and MAGA clothing and flags cheerfully scaled the walls, broke windows, vandalized the chambers, stole items, and reveled in their insistence against all evidence that Donald Trump won re-election. But for those who have been closely following the trajectory of armed right-wing violence and its links to Trump, it wasn't very surprising. My guest is Eric Ward, senior fellow at the Southern Poverty Law Center. He's also the executive director of the Western States Center. Welcome to the program, Eric.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm sure even though you weren't surprised that it happened, the events of Wednesday probably shook you to your core like they did me and probably most Americans, right?
It is true. I think most Americans were horrified by what they saw. Despite the deep political divisions in this country, what we are hearing from elected officials across the political spectrum was that this was an act of insurrection and an act of sedition by the President of the United States. It was an attempt to overthrow a constitutionally legal voting processes within the United States. It was done through physical violence and through physical intimidation. What's more shocking, though, Sonali, is for those of us who have monitored and helped communities organize against the alt-right and white nationalist movement in the United States, isn't the assault on the Congress. It was actually the failure of democratic institutions to take that threat seriously and to respond adequately. It put our nation at risk. And it is now clear that unconscious racial bias that led to that biased form of policing that we all witnessed on Wednesday is its own form of a national security threat. That unconscious racism led our government to be extremely vulnerable on Wednesday.
So let's look at the trajectory more broadly speaking as to what led to Wednesday, because that's really important. At the same time that the FBI director Christopher Wray over the past several years has been warning that armed right-wing violence is the biggest domestic terror threat to the country, President Trump was laying the groundwork even before the election when he sort of knew that he was likely going to lose, because he said over and over again, if I don't win, it means this election was rigged. And you could go as far back as last March to see Trump actively recruiting members for his Army of Trump. He called them that. There is even a website, armyfortrump.com, where for donations you could get, paraphernalia, military-style fatigues with Trump's name on it and MAGA. He talked about recruiting them. So he made it very clear that he was speaking and sending messages to the very same universe of people that are part of the biggest domestic terror threat in the country, but from the words of his own government agency, right?
For nearly 3 years now, a little over 3 years, since Charlottesville, this White House administration, Donald Trump, and those that have enabled them have allowed these far-right paramilitary organizations, including the Proud Boys, to prepare for this insurrection. At the expense of cities around the country, whether it's Charlottesville, Seattle, Portland, Oregon, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Not only have they allowed these groups to train and prepare at the expense of these cities, but they have egged it on through narrative and through the refusal to denounce this type of deep political violence. For over 10 years, the Department of Justice and Department of Homeland Security have been warning elected officials that white nationalism and its alt-right coalition is the significant terrorism threat in the United States. Over the last 10 years, several hundred Americans have been killed by white nationalists. Police officers have been injured and killed by those affiliated with this alt-right movement. And yet the White House and Capitol Police found themselves unprepared. For the White House, I believe at this point it was intentional. For the Capitol Police, I think there are some real questions to be asked about the role that their unconscious bias played in leaving our nation vulnerable.
There were two videos just to that point. I've only seen two so far, one of which showed that at the moment that the barricades were breached, it was actually because a Capitol Police officer seemed to, and I've seen the clip slow down, open the barricades for one of them. And there was another video of Capitol Police inside the Senate chamber, or Capitol building rather, posing for selfies quite happily with protesters that were just walking around him, just giving the sense that they're on the spectrum of conservative whites, conservative white extremists, right?
What we know is that there is bias in crowd control by law enforcement. This has been documented here in Portland, Oregon, by the city of Portland itself in an unreleased evaluation of policing tactics in the city. What the city of Portland found in this leaked memo was that, in fact, law enforcement used more draconian measures, right, against racial justice and racial equity activists, against so-called anarchists and counter demonstrators, than they did with paramilitary groups who were bringing weapons and utilizing them in violent acts inside of our city, including the throwing of an explosive device at one demonstration. We saw this in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where law enforcement allowed an individual who had just shot and killed at least two individuals to walk past them with a weapon. And we now saw this in DC on Wednesday. The fact of the matter is though that it only not left our nation vulnerable, it left other law enforcement who were attempting to practice crowd control, attempting to keep safe elected members of Congress extremely vulnerable. It wasn't only a danger to elected officials, it was a danger to other law enforcement. It was a complete failure, and I believe some of it may have been willful.
How important is it for there to be swift charges filed? I was a little bit dismayed when I heard that of the one woman that we knew that was shot and killed by police, which of course no one deserves to be shot and killed. This was a woman, 35-year-old Air Force veteran named Ashley Babbitt, who was literally in the process of, forcing her way into the building through a broken window, as per reports, when she was shot and killed by an officer in the neck. She died. And the officer was immediately relieved of duty, and the police chief sent his condolences to the family, which, yes, that's great, but when do we ever see such swift action and response to the black and brown victims of unjustified police brutality who are in no way, threatening and pushing their way into the halls of government?
That's right. We rarely see it, if ever. We should remember that the day before, there was a law enforcement agency that refused to file charges. A prosecutor refused to file charges in a case where an African-American man was shot by a law enforcement officer six times in his back, right, in front of his children. We have seen
Jacob Blake
Blake. And the list is long of individuals who have been brutalized by unconscious racism in our system of policing. And we have seen that these individuals have not received justice. Look, we should be clear that left unchecked, right? This unconscious bias that leads to inequities in policing undercuts faith in democratic practice. And as we understand, it leaves not only marginalized communities vulnerable, but it leaves our nation vulnerable. Law enforcement allowed access into the people's house, individuals who sought to overthrow the U.S. government. And in doing so, allowed these individuals access, right, to documents that are private, are classified, are federal property. It was a national security breach. And I believe, right, that those who are responsible for that breach, those who created the conditions that encourage others to attempt that breach, need to be held accountable. But first, we have to deal with the people's business. We have to make sure, as elected officials did, right, that the vote count was concluded and move forward. We have to move through a smooth transition in government. But we should be clear that there are those who are willing to act in ways that are not only bordering on insurrection, but are insurrection. And not all of them came from the streets on Wednesday.
Just before this massive gathering on Wednesday in Washington, D.C., Enrique Tarrio, the leader of the Proud Boys, was arrested on charges of tearing down a banner that said Black Lives Matter in front of a Black church. What happened?
Yes. It was an attempt by city and government to send a strong message. Enrique Tarrio, who is the head of the alt-right group, the Proud Boys, which describes itself as a chauvinist, a Western chauvinist organization, declared that they would be holding protests in D.C. And one of these protests that took place right after the elections, he was specifically filmed. He admitted to attacking a church, a Black church in D.C. and ripping from it a Black Lives Matter sign. That is illegal. He admitted to doing this. He actually said live on social media that he would plead guilty to the charge. And he was arrested at the airport on his way to this demonstration. Now, let's be clear. Once he was arrested, law enforcement found on him two ammunition cartridges that were high capacity, meaning that they were not standard ammunition clips that are used for weapons. And that is a frightening sign that on the eve of a significant series of protests where he and others had used rhetoric that bordered on a call for political violence, which show up with two high capacity clips.
And so, but I understand arrested. That he was simply let out and you know.
He was released and banned from D.C. But again, it shows a little bit of the double standards, right? In states around the country, there are laws preventing and prohibiting paramilitary training as a practice in order to foment political violence or insurrection in the United States. It is fairly clear that these groups have been doing just that for the last 3 years and have not been treated in the way that any other community, any other political formation would be treated if they were engaging in the same activity. Let's not forget that just a few weeks ago, the head of a militia that was led by an African-American, that he was arrested for using rhetoric and engaging in similar activity. Yet what we saw in D.C. was something totally different. What I would say at the end of the day is that if we want to know what the real crisis of white nationalism is in America, we have to be brave enough to look in the mirror. The problem is not white nationalism. It is a threat. The problem is our own democratic institutions. and the unwillingness of our leaders to take white nationalism seriously.
And we are hearing reports now that the first federal charges have been filed against those involved in the Capitol building rioting. A man named Mark Liffingwell was charged with trespassing and assaulting a federal law enforcement officer, violent entry, etc. And it remains to be seen how many more charges will be filed. I mean, there were thousands upon thousands of people in Washington, D.C., near the entire area between the White House and the Capitol building on Wednesday. And then it was about a few hundred people at the very least that broke through the barricades and invaded the Capitol building. But about 60 people were arrested. And then we also know that the Defense Department dragged its feet on deploying the National Guard. Yet last year, when Black Lives Matter protests were in Washington, D.C., there was no talk of anyone invading the Capitol building. And yet you had full-blown, in fatigues, military troops out on the streets. And then, of course, the infamous pre-church photo op attack on peaceful protesters. So massive double standards, not just by DC police, but by the Defense Department.
That is absolutely right.
And you're from Portland, so we know, of course, what their response has been for federal officers there.
Right. Yeah. Yes, I mean, let's be clear, in the city of Portland, without any of this environment, Donald Trump deployed a quasi-federal paramilitary force onto the streets of Portland, Oregon, who on the first night crushed the skull of a protester, a racial justice protester, who was holding a boombox over his head. People were literally kidnapped, had hoods put over their heads, and were shoved into unmarked vehicles where they were then interrogated. It took a lawsuit in federal court, right, to pull this quasi-force off the streets. Again, what we saw play out in Washington, D.C. Looks something different, but it is not new. We have watched this play out now for nearly a year since the killing of George Floyd. The number of civil rights and racial justice activists who have been injured by individuals who have used weapons, who have used vehicles have weapons, who have engaged in beatings of Black Lives Matter activists, physical threats. Government has turned a blind eye to these attacks. It emboldened the white nationalist and alt-right movement, and they brought that violence home to D.C. on Wednesday, and all of us paid the cost of that. There is now less trust in government. There is more fear that these groups will use political violence. And it is time for our elected officials and our government to stand up. Our job is to defend democracy, not defend sedition.
Trump has fashioned himself as the law and order president, and he even on Wednesday, before his Twitter account was suspended over subsequent tweets, said, "We are the party of law and order. Respect the law and our great men and women in blue." It's interesting that this narrative that the Republican Party and Trump and Trump's allies have put out about themselves, William Barr, the attorney general, put out about themselves being the party of law and order, now faced with the products of their own making, very overtly violating law and order, and are bending over backwards to find ways to justify what happened. One of those ways is to simply claim that it wasn't Trump supporters. I mean, it's wild to see these far-fetched claims on social media that, in fact, what we saw on Wednesday was a whole bunch of Black Lives Matter and or Antifa protesters fooling the nation by dressing up in Trump regalia, and that they're the ones who were truly at fault here. I mean, it is mind-blowing, even though, of course, there have been people identified. The man who was sitting in Nancy Pelosi's chair, you know, identified by name a few days before the protests, before the riot, saying that he was ready to go to Washington, D.C., that he was ready to meet a violent death. But yeah, they want us to believe that it was Antifa.
Yes. let's be clear. There is a element of the Republican Party who are holding up in this moment the Constitution with one hand, and they're crushing it with the other. They have emboldened a liar and chief. He is a liar and he is an authoritarian, and he does not seek to save the United States. He doesn't even seek to save white America. What he has been doing is looting white America in order to build his brand, right, and to expand his pocketbook. It's time to be blunt to the American people. We should be clear, right? The movement for Black lives and the civil rights movement in this country has delivered more for white America than the white nationalist movement and systems of white supremacy have ever delivered for the majority of white Americans. And I think many white Americans are starting to realize that. That is why today more white Americans support Black Lives Matter than even supported Martin Luther King during his lifetime. And we continue to see that arc. That is why Donald Trump has been able to exploit demographic anxiety. But let's be clear, if he's gotten away with that, he's gotten away with it because others have chosen to enable it. Folks like Rudy Giuliani, who spoke at a rally this week and told the crowd that our transition of power, our constitutionally protected transition of power, should be a trial by combat, where Donald Trump himself spoke at a rally and told folks that he would lead the march onto Congress. These are individuals who have embraced sedition, and they should be treated in such a manner legally. And now, if we say we believe in the rule of law, it is time for us to act on.
What do you make of the social media enablers of not just Trump, but the movement of right-wing hate? We are constantly hearing from Republicans, from Trump and others in the right wing, that that social media and tech companies are biased against them, when actual evidence shows it's to the contrary. And it took Trump inciting a riot for his Twitter account to not just be canceled, which is what would happen to any of the rest of us, but simply suspended for 12 hours. Facebook and Instagram went a little bit further after doing nothing for so many years in suspending him indefinitely, or at least for the next 2 weeks. But social media bears responsibility for the spreading of the misinformation and the calls for violence, right?
Shame on Twitter and shame on Facebook and shame on any other social media platform that has chosen to profit off the deep division and alienation that is being experienced in this country. Shame on them. And they should face consequences for what occurred. The fact that Donald Trump was only banned from Twitter for 12 hours is simply ludicrous, right? And any company that puts the American public in that much danger should not have the right to function in the United States. We need to be very clear about that. This is not an issue of free speech. Twitter is not a government entity. It is a private business, and we expect it to function within systems of values. And there is no acceptable value, right, that promotes and allows the promotion of a set of theories that have led to the deaths of Americans and led to the deaths of others. It's just simply unacceptable, and it's bad business.
Well, of course, in their minds, it's good business because it makes them money, because their business apparently doesn't depend on the ethics of how they make their money. Well, I want to thank you so much, Eric, for joining us today. Where can people find out more about the work you do?
So people can find out more about us by visiting westernstatescenter.org or following us at WStatesCenter on Twitter. And we look forward to folks really digging in. Do not allow elected officials to be let off the hook in this moment. They enabled this moment, and they need to lean in and to correct it. It is their time to stand up and defend democracy. And they won't do so unless we keep pressure on them.
Eric, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
My guest has been Eric Ward, Senior Fellow at the Southern Poverty Law Center, Executive Director of the Western States Center. We've been discussing Wednesday's violent invasion of the Capitol by pro-Trump rioters. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.